Today is Tuesday, October the 19th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Jackson Vunganyi in Washington. Colin Powell, former Joint Chiefs Chairman and first black U.S. Secretary of State, died Monday from COVID-19 complications. On the show today, we'll look at his legacy and how he will be remembered.
His own experience was one that led him to be very empathetic, to not have this idea that that everyone had equal advantages in the country. I think he probably always was a little bit conflicted about the two parties, but he just wasn't particularly vocal about that.
Haitians on Monday joined a nationwide general strike to protest a growing wave of kidnappings days after the abduction of a U.S.-based group of missionaries. So will the strike create any change in the crisis-stricken island nation?
Nothing at all, because people are scared. There will be absolutely no effect on the kidnapping situation. I mean, tomorrow, probably today, they will start, or they will, I don't know, probably some people were kidnapped today. Probably, I'm saying, because there's no news yet. But tomorrow it will go back to usual.
And last week, a military court in Ouagadougou began the long-awaited trial of 14 men accused in the assassination of Burkina Faso's iconic leader, Thomas Sankara, 34 years ago. The country's presidential advisor joins us to talk about the timing of that trial. And we'll have these stories and more coming up right here on International Edition. Stay tuned. Tributes are pouring in from the Pentagon and the State Department as they remember General Colin Powell as a soldier and statesman. AP Washington correspondent Saga Megani reports.
What an incredible American.
Vice President Harris honors Powell as a trailblazer.
He rose to the highest ranks, not only in the military, but also in areas of foreign policy and statecraft.
President Biden calls Powell, the first black Joint Chiefs Chairman and Secretary of State, a patriot of unmatched honor and dignity. Powell's legacy, though, was tarnished by his faulty claims justifying the U.S. invasion of Iraq 18 years ago. His family says Powell died of COVID-19 complications, his age and history of cancer making him vulnerable despite being fully vaccinated. Sagar Megani, Washington.
Colin Powell, former Joint Chiefs Chairman and Secretary of State, died Monday from COVID-19 complications. That's according to his family. He was 84 years old and had multiple myeloma, a blood cancer which was in remission. And he also had early-stage Parkinson's disease. A son of Jamaican immigrants, Powell had an extraordinary career, making history as the youngest and first black chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, and later served as the first black U.S. Secretary of State. To speak on his legacy, we're joined by David Jacobs, a political science and international affairs professor at the University of Mary Washington. He's also the author of the commissioned study, The Costs of War to United States Allies Since 9/11. He tells me that even though people often associate General Powell with the Second Iraqi War, he should be remembered for his politically moderate views and as someone who played a critical role in shaping U.S. foreign policy in the last 30 years.
What his legacy should be is, and I what I hope in the broader scope of time, people remember him as a skeptic of war and the use of force. I think this is a really important line running through most of his service was skepticism about both the ease with which politicians should use force and what they should expect to achieve through it. And you see that time and time again. Sadly, what I suspect and what I've seen in terms of some of the initial reporting and some of the initial reactions on social media is that the at least immediate reaction has more to do with the specific speech that he gave to the United Nations Security Council in February 2003.
Right. Okay, so what was his role in shaping American foreign policy as a military man and later on as a Secretary of State?
Well, and I think today what we really, it's really striking in retrospect. At the time, it wasn't so strange, but what we have to remember is this is somebody who came up, not just from humble origins, but he came up from, you know, being an ROTC and served as an infantry man in Vietnam. And so he knew war from direct personal experience. And so when he was sitting around the table, whether it was as National Security Advisor or as Chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, or later as Secretary of State, and he expressed the cautions about how war could get out of control and how it could have these adverse consequences, he did so from a perspective of direct personal experience, of not only having participated in war himself, but having seen, having had friends and those who served under him die, having seen the devastation that war caused in Vietnam itself. So that legacy, I think, is really important, and it's striking because we don't have that today at the same levels of people who are serving in those highest offices who have that direct experience themselves and can then speak with that level of authority that he had.
Now, what would you say is his single most important achievement? I mean, of his numerous groundbreaking roles, which one would you say he will be most remembered for? Would be Secretary of State or as a Chairman Joint Chief of Staff, his military career?
It is likely that he'll be most remembered for his role as Secretary of State under George W. Bush. Yeah, I would like people, you know, whether it's Americans or people around the world, to understand that he had a much longer service to the country, and also that he had this consistent record of pointing out the limitations of war. But I suspect very much that he will be remembered primarily for his role as Secretary of State in the Bush administration, and as we've been discussing that speech in particular.
Now, he was a Republican and he served in Republican administrations, but he's often viewed as a moderate. How did these politics all evolve over the years?
Yeah, so this is a great, and this is also something that I think that is hard for us to kind of get a handle on today or think about today, is that he served under both Republican and Democratic administrations. He had at the time, this is also, I think, important to note, that in the 90s and even into the early 2000s, he was a voice of caution on the use of force for any reasons other than direct threats to national interest. Now, at a time, that was more akin to a Republican position, because Democrats in the early Cold War period, particularly in the Clinton administration, were advocating humanitarian intervention, and at least many on the Republican side of the spectrum had more of a skeptical position about humanitarian intervention. And so that led to he had a famous clash with Madeleine Albright, where over Bosnia, where she said, "What good is this powerful military that you have, Colin, if you're not going to actually use it?" And he said in his memoirs that he thought he would have an aneurysm, because you don't use the U.S. military as a toy or as a tool for minor purposes, from his perspective. And he didn't talk a lot about it, but from a social perspective, I think he was always way more moderate and in favor of of social welfare programs, particularly that would help children. His own experience was one that led him to be very empathetic, to not have this idea that that everyone had equal advantages in the country. So I think he, probably always was a little bit conflicted about the two parties, but he just wasn't particularly vocal about that.
David Jacobs is a political science and international affairs professor at the University of Mary Washington. The Biden administration is asking the U.S. Supreme Court to block the strict Texas abortion law while the legal challenges play out in the courts. AP's Jackie Quinn reports.
The Justice Department has asked the nation's highest court to lift an appeals court order that allows Texas to continue enforcing its abortion ban, spelled out in a unique law designed to resist federal court challenges. The department says the Texas ban defies previous abortion decisions because the time frame in which the procedure is allowed has already expired before many women realize they are pregnant. White House Press Secretary Jen Psaki says President Biden wants to protect abortion access access for women.
He continues to believe that Roe v. Wade is the law of the land. He supports efforts to codify Roe v. Wade.
The administration also told the justices they could fast-track a decision on the law's constitutionality this term, which sees another abortion case on the docket. Jackie Quinn, Washington.
Voice of America!
And Iran wants the United States to lift sanctions to prove that it wants stalled nuclear talks to proceed. AP's Mike Garcia reports.
Iran's president said Monday the United States should lift sanctions on Iran to prove it is serious about restarting stalled nuclear talks in Vienna. Ibrahim Raisi made his comments in an interview with Iranian state TV. But in Washington, at a State Department briefing, spokesman Ned Price.
We will continue to enforce them together with our allies and partners around the world until and unless Iran chooses a path of diplomacy.
Talks between Iran and the European signatories of the 2015 nuclear deal alongside Russia and China have been stalled since June. President Donald Trump unilaterally withdrew the United States from the accord in 2018. Mike Gracia, Washington.
Former President Donald Trump has filed a lawsuit to block the release of documents sought by the committee investigating the January 6th Capitol insurrection. AP's Jackie Quinn reports.
Just days after President Biden ordered the release of documents, call logs, and schedules from the Trump White House from January 6th, the former president filed a lawsuit saying the request by the Congressional Committee investigating the deadly attack is almost limitless in scope and seeks records with no reasonable connection to that day. Trump calls it a political ploy in court papers and says Biden should assert executive privilege. The January 6th legislative committee seeking the documents as it investigates the mob of Trump supporters that stormed the Capitol, trying to block the certification of Biden's election victory. Jackie Quinn, Washington.
You're listening to International Edition on the Voice of America. I'm Jackson Vunganyi. The streets of Port-au-Prince were empty on Monday morning, with shops and schools closed as part of a general strike called by transportation industry leaders to protest the growing wave of kidnappings in the country. The strike was organized the day after the abduction of a U.S.-based group of missionaries by a local gang known as 400 Mawozo. The Ohio-based Christian Aid Ministry said that the 16 Americans and one Canadian were in Haiti to visit an orphanage in Croix de Bouquet, a commune east of the capital of Port-au-Prince. The White House says that the FBI was working with the U.S. diplomatic team in Haiti in efforts to locate and free the kidnapped missionaries. Jahan de Tibet is an investigative reporter based in Port-au-Prince, himself a survivor of the regular kidnappings in the city. He tells me that Monday's strike will do little to change the poor security situation in the country.
The town where the missionaries were kidnapped is called Gantier, which is a small town in between two big cities, Croix de Bouquet and Malpas. Malpas is a border city with the Dominican Republic. So that's where they were kidnapped. They were kidnapped by a gang called the 400 Mawozo. Mawozo is a Creole word here that mean oafs, that mean bastard. And it was funny when people heard the gang is called 400 Mawozo. It was funny in the beginning. But they start to be key to become very violent, you know, and post their stuff in social media. And then we realized that, they may have a funny name. Right. Yeah, they may have a funny name, but there's nothing funny about it. So the gang leader over there is a voodoo priest. He's really young. He's a young guy. He's a voodoo priest. He called his name L'Amo Sanju, which means in English, deaths without days. That's his name. So he's the leader of that gang over there.
He's the gang leader. What time were the missionaries kidnapped?
I don't have the exact time, but I think it should be in the afternoon. When they are to visit the orphanage and then come back the same day, it should be the afternoon.
And how common is this type of kidnappings in Haiti, targeting foreigners?
Kidnapping targeting foreigners is not common. But this particular gang, that's not the first time.
Okay.
Right now, they kidnap evangelical missionaries. But a few months ago, in the beginning of the year, they kidnapped 12 Catholic priests and nuns in the same area. I mean, the whole group was not released at the same time. But they released them few by few, one by one. It took almost 1 month to release them all. And then the government paid a lot of money, and the Catholic Church the Catholic Church paid a lot of money to release them. So it's not the first time kidnapping religious people, and it's not the first time kidnapping foreigners, because in this group of Catholic priests, we had like four or five French priests and nuns.
Would you say that during this time, when after the death of President Moïse, when many said there is kind of a power vacuum, that this has gotten worse?
No. If you see it, if you look at it, it's not that it has gotten worse, but everything that was happening during Jovenel Moïse's presidency, the opposition and a lot of people in the population, they always said that it was Moïse's fault. It was Moïse doing it. It was Jovenel Moïse. Jovenel Moïse is responsible for this. So it's like we thought when he died, I mean, it was tragic and everything else, but a lot of people thought when he died, okay, the guy is dead. He was responsible for everything that was going on. So what now? You know, when Jovenel Moïse was president, we had some weeks, we had some days where you have 10, 15 kidnappings per day, you know, like right now. We had some days like that, wow. But not all the time. But right now, it's like systematic. It's really systematic. It's at least 10 people. And they broke a record last Monday. 57 people.
Kidnapped.
Kidnapped, yeah.
By the different gangs or one gang?
One gang. That was one gang. That was the gang of Martisan. One gang. 57 people.
What about this? So the gang, the G9, the
Federation, yeah.
of gangs, are they also involved in kidnappings?
Oh, yeah. I mean, all to the leaders always saying that no, but the gang of Martisan is part of G9, and it's everybody knows that they've been kidnapping people. It's not a secret. And sometimes, I mean, they have done it. Some other gang may have done it at night or, you know, hiding to do it. But Martisan, they do it broad daylight, early morning, daylight, and videos are all over the social media. People filming them, getting people, getting trucks, getting out autobuses full of people, getting inside the area they call Grand Ravine, which is a ghetto inside Martisan, and then, you know, kidnap these people, hold them there for a few days until their family pay $10,000, $20,000, $50,000, and sometimes $100,000, depending on who you are. They always start the bid at millions. So I bet with these Americans, it's going to be something like 2, 3, or 5 million per person to start the negotiation.
Now, do they usually know the person that they're targeting, or is it arbitrarily?
Yes, sometimes they have targeted kidnapping people that they know they're after that person. These people, they kidnap them mostly in front of their house. Sometimes they get inside your house to get you. So you can imagine it's a targeted kidnapping. But most of the times, it's like a quota. You know, the boss say we need 10 people today. The gang go out. They need to bring in 10 people.
What can you tell us about today's protest? How did it happen? And what kind of effect or impact is it likely to have on these kidnappings?
Nothing at all, because people are scared. There will be absolutely no effect on the kidnapping situation. I mean, tomorrow, probably today, they will start, or they will, I don't know, probably some people were kidnapped today, probably, I'm saying, because there is no news yet. But tomorrow it will go back to usual.
That was Jean-Hande Tibé, an investigative reporter based in Port-au-Prince. The crisis in Haiti has become a major political issue for the United States after hundreds of Haitian migrants started arriving at the U.S.-Mexico border last month, only to be met with a wave of deportations. And in other news, the U.S. Special Envoy for Afghanistan is stepping down following the chaotic American withdrawal from the country. That's according to the State Department. Zalmay Khalilzad will leave the post this week after more than 3 years on the job under both the Trump and Biden administrations. He had been criticized for not pressing the Taliban hard enough in the peace talks that began while Donald Trump was president. And for more on this story and other breaking news, visit our website at voanews.com. And remember to connect with us on our social media platforms. On Twitter, we are at VOA Africa. On YouTube, search for VOA Africa. You're listening to VOA's International Edition. I'm Jackson Vunganyi. NASA recently sent their Lucy space probe to explore Jupiter's Trojan clusters. Trojan asteroids are two groups of asteroids that lead and follow the giant planet's orbit around the sun. Rick Pantaleo tells us more in today's Science in a Minute.
This is Science in a Minute.
NASA recently launched its Lucy space probe, its first mission that will explore Jupiter's Trojan asteroids. It will be a long trip for Lucy, and she'll need some help to reach her destination about 755.5 to 800.25 million kilometers from Earth. So she'll get a couple of boosts from Earth's gravity. Jupiter Trojans are in two large asteroid clusters that precede and follow the giant planet in its orbit around the Sun. The spacecraft will meet the leading Trojan cluster in 2027 and will conduct four observational flybys. Lucy will again head toward Earth for another gravity boost in 2031 that will send it to the Trojan cluster following Jupiter's solar orbit in 2033. Scientists think that Jupiter Trojans are leftovers of the ancient material that shaped the outer planets. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
The government of Burundi has officially started its COVID-19 vaccination program after the first batch of vaccines arrived last week. The country is among the last to have its citizens vaccinated against COVID-19. Moses Havyarimana reports from Arusha.
This week is among the historic weeks in Burundi as citizens started to get vaccinated against coronavirus. However, no government official was present at the vaccination centers in Bujumbura during the launch, leaving many citizens skeptical to be vaccinated. Agathon Rwasa is a Burundian lawmaker and an opposition leader.
Since it is available, those who will be willingly like to be vaccinated will do so as it has been stated by the government. And nevertheless, there is a need also continued sensitizations about any kind of precautions to be taken into account so that we minimize the risks of contamination.
China deployed 500,000 doses of Sinopharm vaccine. The government had cautioned citizens that they should be vaccinated voluntarily and on their own risk. Ndaiziga Gilbert is a professor in one of the universities in Bujumbura.
I welcome this vaccination campaign, which comes in late in Burundi, I think. But of course, better late than never. But what is not possibly good about it is that authorities, officials are really not sensitizing much about this campaign, which means that people may not respond massively to this operation.
Many Burundians have welcomed this decision. Clarisse Nzeimana is a resident in Bujumbura.
As far as I'm concerned, I'm kind of reluctant about COVID vaccination. It kind of scares me a little bit whenever I think about being vaccinated. Reason being, if maybe the country doesn't make it compulsory, I don't feel like doing it voluntarily. Unless maybe the government appeases the citizens and assures that there will be no drawbacks once you get the vaccine.
Early this year, Burundi government had rejected to receive COVID-19 vaccines, citing that the vaccines were yet to be approved by the World Health Organization. But now, the government has authorized the deployment of the vaccines, including a disclaimer that it will not be responsible for any loss or side effects caused by the vaccine. Since March last year, the country has registered more than 19,000 cases of COVID-19, with 90% of them recovering and 14 have died of the virus. Moses Havyarimana, VOA Africa, Arusha, Tanzania.
Last week, a military court in Ouagadougou began the long-awaited trial of 14 men, including the former president, Blaise Compaoré, accused in the assassination of Burkina Faso's iconic leader, Thomas Sankara, 34 years ago. The slaying of Sankara, a Pan-African icon, has for years cast a shadow over the poor Sahel state, fueling its reputation for turbulence and bloodshed. Abdushakur Aboud spoke with Saeed Hilal, a personal advisor to President Roch Kabore, asking him why they decided to start the process now.
30 years is not a very long time, sir. Justice must be protected. When justice is protected, it will be a lesson for all persons, especially our political leaders, to understand that whatever wrong is done, only justice can be used to right it. I think Burkina Faso is aware that this case will be a therapy for our country. It will be a national therapy for national reconciliation. All those who commit crimes, blood crimes in Africa, must be aware that justice will always be used to correct their mistakes.
So Blaise Compaoré himself, one of the accused, is not going to be present at this case. So do we think we're going to get the full knowledge of what happened?
Well, I believe that President Compaoré had an historic opportunity to present his version of what took place in this fatal event on the 15th of October, 1987. Many believe that he has missed an historic opportunity to give his version of what transpired on that day. However, there's no bad justice. So one way or the other, some truth will come out. And I believe that this process will allow his wife, Mariam Sankara, his children, and the families of the other victims to mourn their dead close members of their families. And I believe also the country will eventually know the truth, some form of truth, of what really happened during the day. But this is a therapy, a mechanism for the country and for Africa.
So how important, what's the aim and what is the final aim of this process?
Well, the purpose of this process, I believe, is to find the truth of what really happened in 1987. The truth is an important matter for the whole of Africa and for the youth of Africa. Thomas Sankara was an iconic leader. He had some very strong progressive ideas. Many people believe that his death was not only caused by local politics and interests, but there was also some fear in some African countries that his ideas might spread. Now, whether that is true or not, this case will be able to at least expose the causes that led to the elimination of Thomas Sankara. But I think the other objective that Burkina Faso is trying to transmit to Africa is that coup d'etats, and especially these coup d'etats that lead to the killings of presidents, is not good for our countries. I think it will be a good lesson for African countries to be aware that whoever commits such a crime, because it is a crime anyway, to kill a president, to overthrow a government violently, they expose themselves one day or the other to face the justice of their country or even international justice.
That was Siad Hilal, a personal advisor to Burkina Faso President Roch Kabore. He was speaking to VOA's Abdushakur Aboud. This has been International Edition on The Voice of America. On behalf of our entire production team, thank you so much for listening. Remember to visit our website for in-depth coverage of world events and news 24 hours a day at voanews.com. Until next time, I'm Jackson Vunganyi in Washington, wishing you a great week ahead.
The World Health Organization and Africa Center for Disease Control say we all can help fight the global pandemic by frequently washing our hands with soap and water or using hand sanitizers. For more information on protecting yourself and others, check with reliable sources such as the WHO and Africa Center for Disease.